Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its author's intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special two-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.
Hey, I lived in New York City and Manhattan all my life, okay? So, you know, my views are a little bit different than if I lived in Iowa, perhaps. I am pro-choice in every respect and as far as it goes.
I am pro-life. Everybody knows I'm pro-life.
But you still, I just believe in choice.
There has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah. I've been told by some people that was a older line answer.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast, the show about the man who thought his reality TV program would work better as a competition between the black contestants and the white contestants. I'm Jacob Weisberg. So about that TV show, here's my confession. Before about a week ago, I'd never watched The Apprentice. I knew Donald Trump was famous for firing people on the air, but I couldn't have told you who Omarosa was or how the game of the show worked, or why it turned into Celebrity Apprentice with Geraldo Rivera or anything else about it, including whether it was worth watching. That's why I called up my friend Virginia Heffernan, who used to be Slate's TV critic. Virginia not only writes brilliantly about television, but actually likes reality TV better than all those good shows that I like to watch. And boy, does she have Donald Trump figured out. I'll be back with that conversation right after we do the tweets.
I gave a woman named Barbara Rez a top NY construction job when that was unheard of. And now she is nasty. So much for a nice thank you. What Barbara Rez does not say is that she would call my company endlessly and for years trying to come back. I said no. Isn't it funny when a failed senator like goofy Elizabeth Warren can spend a whole day tweeting about Trump and getting nothing done in the Senate? Wow. 30,000 emails were deleted by crooked Hillary Clinton. She said they had to do with a wedding reception. Liar. How could she run? The pathetic new hit ad against me misrepresents the final line. Quote, "You can tell them to go blank themselves," was about China, not women.
My guest today is Virginia Heffernan. She's a writer for many magazines, including the New York Times Magazine, and she has a book coming out that I'm so excited about called Magic and Loss, The Internet as Art. We're not talking about that today. The book's not out for a couple of weeks. We're talking about Apprentice and Donald Trump, but keep your eye peeled for that book. Virginia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jacob.
Virginia, I think we have a lot of listeners who've probably never seen The Apprentice. That would describe me about a month ago. So just briefly, what is the show? How does the game work?
Well, one thing I worry about is just like you don't know very many people voting for Trump, you maybe don't know many people have seen The Apprentice, but it is the silent majority. So The Apprentice is a game show, but a reality show at the same time. And instead of testing people's ability to answer quiz questions, it purports to test their business skills in the name of finding someone so brilliant and canny as to qualify to be Donald Trump's
lackey.
Apprentice. Yeah. Lackey. Factotum.
And it was a big hit for NBC when it started back in 2004, I think.
Huge hit for them. Mark Burnett's the producer. He had made Survivor, whose worldview, I should say, is very social Darwinist. You can hear in the surrounding material around The Apprentice and around Survivor that this is this brutal Hobbesian world where we have to fight it out. And what they say in the beginning of The Apprentice is, this is the real jungle. You know, this is like Survivor in pinstripes.
Survivor, they vote you off the island.
Survivor, they vote you off the island. I'm a big Survivor fan still. And by the way, it wrapped last night. And congratulations to Michelle. I think she played a very good social game. There are three parts of Survivor. There's the so-called social game. There's the physical competition. And then there's a strategy game. The Apprentice, which had this wonderful setting, they had a real personality in the figure of Donald Trump, where Jeff Probst was just an any man host. He could have been hosting Family Feud. Donald Trump was Donald Trump. But they didn't create an interesting strategy game or an interesting social game because there was no voting. You don't get voted off the island for either being weak or not playing strategically or just being disliked. It's just a tyranny.
Although Donald Trump has his little group of counselors, which by the end of the show's run is like just his family, right? But it started out with there's some kind of like gray eminence guy and some woman who were like on the panel of judges with
him. That's right. They're somewhere between the non-Simon Cowell hosts on American Idol and like Smithers in The Simpsons, you know, the guy.
They just suck up to Donald Trump.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Where Montgomery Burns, I mean, they call him Mr. Trump. I think Ivanka, his daughter, calls him Mr. Trump or almost. And they say, well, that one seems very insubordinate to me, Mr. Trump, about the people that they want to fire. Like Smithers always saying, like, Montgomery Burns sometimes says, somebody up there loves me. And Smithers says, somebody down here too loves you, sir. You know, there's a lot of that.
I haven't watched that much of it, but it's sort of watching it, you know, it seems to be Trump performing this kind of theater of cruelty, right? I mean, it's his arbitrary feelings about who he's going to fire. He obviously takes great relish in firing people, although he often said, oh, that was really hard. But he loves firing people. And it's this sort of willful infliction of pain.
Yeah.
On these people who, you know, you sort of see them, this is what they were aspiring to do, and he just kicks them out based on what he had for breakfast or his mood.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea that it's theater of cruelty because that boardroom, which was the so-called tribal council reworked for the pinstripes version of Survivor, that boardroom is high drama. It's shot in this very noirish way, and the people are very made up. Think of like Omarosa or some of the heroes of the show.
Well, say who Omarosa was, because I was just trying to. Was watching some of these clips. Who was Omarosa?
So Survivor doesn't really have villains in the same way because the villain might also be a very strategic player. So people tend to tip their hats to people who play a canny, shrewd game, even if they're mean. But because Trump, as a persona on the show, is very, I love you, I hate you, the show very successfully in the first season created a villain and a woman named Omarosa. I can't remember her last name, but like typical reality shows, only first names are used. And one of the episodes after Omarosa was violently cut from the game, they said, you know, we're bringing back, or we have some things coming this next game. Two words, Oma. New card, Rosa. So she was built up as being like sort of just the scourge of Trump, you know, and he thrives in that setting. Interestingly, later in many games, because they brought her back many, many times, they could never create a character as good as she is. He decided that he liked her. And this is actually something, I mean, just to, you know, call attention to Trump's role now. He's done with Megyn Kelly. You know, it's just like, I hate you. And then just like somehow you won me over and I love you. I broke you down.
He tamed her. I mean, did he tame Omarosa in the same way?
Because
he clearly broke Megyn Kelly.
Yes, yes, or at least in the theater of it, he did that. And yeah. I think that's probably what he did to her too, actually. But all of this, the love you, I hate you thing goes to, I think, what is most striking about his performance as host of that show or as boss of that show, which is he's capricious and tyrannical. I think there's some philosopher Hume or Kant or something who says the limit case of human depravity is to be a capricious tyrant. So if you're a tyrant and everybody knows what you're going to do, that's one thing. But if you're a capricious tyrant as a parent, as a president, as a king, then you keep the population in awe because they never know what you're going to do and what you do is binding.
Right.
And so
they don't know how to satisfy Trump.
They don't know how to satisfy him. So one of the things you may remember from the, the really famous firings on the show is how he's set to fire someone, and another character intervenes on that person's behalf, to say, you know what, he actually did a good job as project manager. And Trump looks over at that person and says, what an idiot you are for intervening for someone else. You're fired.
And he'll fire extra people. Like the format of the show is you fire one person, and sometimes he'll just fire three people for the fun of it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And it has that, that mafia look. I don't know if it's the Untouchables or something, which is just like, and I'll shoot you too. we're laughing because there's something adrenaline-y and interesting about seeing that happen. One time he's talking to Gene Simmons, the KISS frontman, who's a friend of his. And he's about to fire one of the other two people, but Simmons makes what he thinks is a bad decision. And he keeps saying, you're my friend, Gene. Do what I tell you to do. It's for you. I'm speaking for you. And Gene Simmons refuses. And he's so mad at the insubordination of someone who's probably older than he is, or certainly his age and a peer, that he says, Gene, you're fired. You know why I have to do this. And, Trump has talked about how his father – toward Ivana in particular, his first wife, was always telling her what to do, what to order, because for her own good. I'm doing this for you. And he does that sometimes to the contestants.
How much do you think – I mean, obviously most of America knows Trump through these programs.
Yeah.
I happen not to because I hadn't really watched them. How much do you think that show and his persona from that show is responsible for his political success? I mean, this is, a campaign that everyone got wrong, right? Nate Silver said it was a 2% chance or a 5% mm-hmm. chance. All the kind of political analyst class, people like me who looked at this as this guy as a candidate, said there's no way that this man gets elected to anything. But he had this sort of out in the open secret life as this reality TV show star for 14 or 15 seasons.
Yeah.
Right? Is that why he's where he is right now?
I think that one thing you can see in the show is that he's the voice of the id or just a florid male emotionalism. He's practically an hysteric because his reasons for firing people, and this is where he's completely at odds with a Nate Silver style worldview, are, this irrationalism first. He's actually, he always is balking at so-called political correctness, these phantoms. But he, in fact, is very easily triggered and made to feel unsafe, as they say. Like, he hates then as now on The Apprentice and now being interrupted. It's like the worst thing in his the transcript of his interview with the Washington Post editorial board. He talks about a guy at one of his rallies who he said was so loud. And he goes on a 200-word riff about how this guy should be in the opera. Pavarotti isn't as loud as he is. It's just like the concept that someone would raise his voice to drown out Trump, who has the mic, who's at the podium. But in the Apprentice, he does the same thing. If someone interrupts him while he's on his spiel about something usually emotional, he fires them. And I think for every one of us who's just been like, oh, why do I have to make a policy argument against this person? I just don't like him. He bugs me,
That's his argument, right.
And he gets to be – he's the one who gets to be annoyed, who gets to be like, I just don't like your face, and that's why I don't want to work with you. And in some ways, lots of us feel that way. And I certainly think people who feel oppressed by political correctness or oppressed by – I just wrote a piece for Politico about Trump and Twitter, and – I was sort of thinking that there are a lot of people in this country who are very nervous because they can't keep up with – they can't tell Muslims from Sikhs, say, I'm sure my grandfather couldn't. And or they compliment a woman on her figure in the office, and suddenly that's wrong. So they feel like they're on eggshells all the time. And what Trump does is just crunch down those eggshells. He's just like, you know what I mostly think about you? You're ugly. You know, I don't even hold myself to like find a better way to phrase that or think of a different thing. And it's like, I think it's a relief. Was a relief on The Apprentice. Now it seems to have gone too far. I mean, you don't mind him hosting a show for entertainment, a game show, but running the country, you know, and I think that's where the East Coast press has been, especially in New York City. I think Jack Schaefer said this, you know, we just thought like, oh, he's a, you know, a circus clown or whatever, but, you know, he'd never do anything dangerous. Not only did we underestimate his capacity to attract people, but we, I think, underestimated his will to real power.
Where do you think Trump as performer comes into this? I mean, at what level is he playing a role then and playing a role now? And at what level is this his real, this is who he is? He's, as you say, it's the id set free, and he's acting out who a lot of other men would be if they could get away with it.
Yeah, I think he's acting out that role. I think he, you know, what other men would be, the sort of feeling that like, the only reason you don't talk like me is because you're like castrated by civilization and feminists on the one hand, or you're just personal failure, you know, because success, this is what success looks like. You get to say what you want. One thing I heard him say, I was rewatching The Apprentice a little bit. He keeps talking about The Apprentice launched at the beginning where he needed to make a comeback. He admits that he's billions of dollars in debt. And the show in the old opening used to show the debt clock. Like, yep, as if the trillions of dollars of national debt were his debt.
Even his debt is really big.
Exactly.
It's the biggest
debt. And he talks about being in debt. He talks about setbacks, but that he's come back, made more money than ever, and having more fun. That's a big part of it, too. He does make it look like fun. And I will say that his Democratic counterparts, as much as I love one of them in particular and support her, they don't always look like they're just like, this is a big lark. And he, I think, said today, isn't this fun? I'm having a great time. You know, that looks good too. You know, that looks good. On the opening of The Apprentice, you really do think I'll have what he's having.
Yeah. You know? How do you win with this guy? He clearly has contempt for weakness, you know, and he homes in on it. I mean, he can smell people's weakness and he, you know, will destroy them for that. But as you say, he also can't stand people standing up to him and challenging him.
Yeah.
So what is ever an effective strategy on the show for succeeding with Trump?
That's a good question. I mean, the, you know, Bill, who won the first season, was a good soldier. He was like, had a brush cut, and he pretty much yes-sired and no-sired. And he was a little bit lackluster. As for the Omarosa types who really like come at him hard and get under his skin, you know, for whatever reason, she now, as you say, Megyn Kelly, like have submitted to being tamed by him. I mean,
so he likes brisk efficiency or surrender, or I guess ideally the combination.
Yeah. But I think probably not trying to think about how to please or displease Donald Trump. Right. It would be the only, like, the real way to go. Like,
he doesn't like psychology either.
For his opponents, well, to the extent that he's in your head,
yeah,
you probably are already, you know, acting in like a craven codependent way, like either drawing hard boundaries with him or, you know, acquiescing and being tamed. I mean, I every time someone says, like, the Times saying this thing of he, you know, sexually harassed 50 women and trying to kind of Cosbyify his lechery, yeah, I think it sounds a little contrived, right? The only thing that will stop him is handcuffs. If, like, I don't want to hear any, like, he's annoying or brash. I don't like him. He's got bad hair. I just am like, when there is that line that says he has, like, you know, broken international law or federal law, and he can be locked up behind bars, then he'll be stopped by the press.
Virginia, thank you so much for joining me.
It's great to be here. It's great to see you.
That's it for today's episode of Trumpcast, but I have an announcement. On Monday, I'm going to be at the Sixth and I Synagogue in Washington, D.C. at 7 o'clock with my brother, Joe Weisberg. My brother is the creator of the FX show, The Americans, and I just wrote a biography of Ronald Reagan. So we're going to be talking about Reagan, the Americans, and the 1980s. This is going to be an 80s quiz. It's going to be a lot of fun. Please join us if you can. Trumpcast was produced by Henry Milofsky and Jason DeLeon. Until I fired them. Steve Lickteig, Slate's executive producer, he tried sticking up for Henry and Jason, and I fired him too. Andy Bowers, I hope you enjoyed being chief content officer, because you're fired. Now scram, get out of here, all of you. I'm Jacob Weisberg. The only guy who can fire me is John DiDomenico. Thanks for listening to TrumpCast.
I like Michael Douglas.